Hey y'all, I'm back for another episode. Can you believe I'm back so soon? Well, I am. So I'm going to deliver this podcast episode a bit differently. If I find that it's a little too long, I might split it up into two different episodes. But we'll see how it goes. I'm going to try some things out, throw it out there. I'll see how it feels. You guys can tell me how it feels to you. I'll go ahead and start with saying, if there's any communication you want to leave me, if you go to my Twitter page, which is Faith's Reality, FAITHSREALITY, Faith's Reality, or on Instagram at Therapeutic Reality, which is the name of the podcast, then you can, of course, click the link in my bio for each and communicate with me in any way. Or you could leave a voice note if you're listening to me on the Anchor platform. So I'll start with this. I remembered at the end of the last episode, I said, oh, I forgot I have to tell you guys something. So I'll tell you that now. But before I get to that, I left a note on the last episode stating how I made up a word. So last week, I made up a word, and I'm not even going to repeat that word because it's real bad. The word should have been ostracized, okay? The saddest part, see, it's not sad that I said it wrong. What's sad is that I didn't catch myself when I said it. It wasn't until I published the episode and listened to it playback that I realized, child, you making up words. Get it together. So the word should have been ostracized if you listened to the last episode. Okay, on to the two things I want to tell y'all. What I learned about, it was a little over a year ago, I learned of a diagnosis called Graves' disease as it relates to me. The medical providers that I have assigned this diagnosis to my health chart. And so I want to speak more about Graves' disease and what I've learned about the diagnosis in general and the lifestyle changes that I've had to make. And I'm not sure how I'll do it. I'm thinking, is that a YouTube thing? Is this a podcast thing? Is it a bloggy thing? I'm not fully sure. But I do know that it's important when a person has been diagnosed with a rare disease that people who have also been provided with or given the same diagnosis, that those people that have the willingness and the courage to speak, that they ought to speak so that people can find comfort in the community. So just want to put that out there. Also, I have re-engaged in a PhD program. So re-engaged because I started in 2013. I completed one semester. I was 2 weeks from completing a full year. Why was only 2 weeks from completing a full year? Because 2 weeks before the semester ended, I was just like, I can't. I just can't. And I took a leave of absence. And why did I say I just can't? I really wasn't emotionally into it. When I was in high school and in undergraduate school, I just wasn't connected to the majority of my classes. They were all just to fulfill the requirements so that I could graduate. But my master's program was within my purpose and my passion, and I enjoyed every single class I took. When I graduated, I felt like, we don't have 3 more years left. Y'all sure? You sure you don't need me to stay over? Because I can. I absolutely loved it. So when I entered the PhD program, I was going through the motions. And thankfully, I was fortunate enough to make really good grades. But I am not someone that's just a grades earner. I am someone that believes in understanding and grasping the information that I'm being taught. And so I felt like I was continuing to go through the motions. I was getting really unhappy and dissatisfied. And so I decided to take a leave of absence. So how did I get back to it? I was scrolling through social media and I see an ad for an MSW, which is a Master of Social Work, an MSW program at Fordham University in New York City. And I earned my MSW in New York as well. And I saw the picture and I thought, oh, I wish I was in school. And the next thought was, well, then why don't you go to school? And so I reached out to my school, and within literally about 2 weeks, I was given the go ahead to either start this fall semester or in the spring. It was up to me. I decided to start with this fall semester. And here I am, back in my PhD in social work program. And as I thought it would be, but I wasn't, you never know for sure, but now I know for sure. The feeling, the engagement, the passion that I felt when I was getting my master's, I feel it now. The difference is I'm in school part-time or half-time, but I'm working full-time. And I want to adjust that so that I can devote more attention and more focus on my studies, because that's really where my passion truly does lie. So that's our intro, and we're going to move into some other topics. Thank you. All right, y'all, let's get into this first segment. So I guess I would title this segment Spirituality. I've been kind of trying to figure out where I completely fit in this whole, I don't know, media space. It's important for me to always be authentic. That's something that I've kind of always been about, even before this word was in my vocabulary. When I was coming up, the word was real, but real was always associated with, I'll fight you, I'll cuss you out, I'm aggressive. But it was never associated with being true to oneself. But that's always the place where I like to reside. And even though it's oftentimes not accepted by certain groups of people or at certain points in my life, it was still important to me. And so here I am again. I'm, like I said, in this space in the media world, if you will, and I'm finding that I'm not as authentic as I'd like to be because I'm a very spiritual person, but I've not been making my spirituality as much of a priority as everything else is. And so I was listening to a sermon recently, and the minister said, Jesus did not come to restructure society, but to save souls who were lost. And he was bringing up this point based on how Christians can become so focused on the election and things related to it that we forget that Jesus's focus was not on politics. His focus was to save souls. And it certainly doesn't mean that if you care about politics as a Christian, you are wrong or in error. But it can't be primary to the Christian's primary focus, which is to lead people to love. That's supposed to be our guiding star, is leading people to love. And I haven't done that. And not leading people to love in the way that I know and have experienced love. So I'm going to add a segment to every episode that will be a spirituality note or moment, segment. I don't know. I didn't want it to be me preaching or every episode was about only a spiritual topic, although for me, everything is spiritual, darling. But I did want it to be a part of everything, because a part of every episode, because it's a part of everything for me. And I do have plans for myself. And if God allows it to be then some of the things that I have planned to do, which I believe are God's will for me to do, will be just solely focused on spirituality. But my podcast is not just that. It's my spirituality, and my spirituality really does inform the way I view the world. So, yeah, that was long-winded. But anyway, so what I wanted to talk about in this little segment about spirituality, although this is not my spirituality nugget for this episode, that'll be literally another segment in this episode. But since I'm on the topic of spirituality today, I saw on social media that a gospel singer posted on her platform. It says, "You can't sow hoe seeds and reap marriage benefits. Your brain and body don't switch like that. You gotta prepare your mind for marriage because it's ministry." So I'm gonna break this down just a little bit. We ain't gonna stay on this long. You can't sow hoe seeds. My first issue is the name calling. I just don't think it's necessary to get a solid point across with name calling. Oh, I don't need to say more. I just don't think it's necessary. So it says, you can't sow hoe seeds and reap marriage benefits. Says who? Says who? So first of all, I think we need to define what is a hoe seed or what's a hoe. Let's define that, because I was under the impression that technically a hoe is an abbreviated form of stating whore. And a whore technically would be a woman who receives payment for sexual acts. So first of all, let's clear that up. So a woman who maybe is promiscuous, maybe someone would say sexually free, however you want to phrase it or term it, or from a Christian perspective, just flat out fornicating, okay? If we want to call that woman a hoe, I guess, I don't know. I didn't write it, so I don't know what it means. But it says, you can't sow hoe seeds and reap marriage benefits. Do you know why that's not true? Because there was Rahab. Is that her name? Was that the one that was in the Bible who was her? Was she the prostitute in the Bible that saved the... Was it Joshua she saved? I'm not sure. Don't quote me on them names. But I remember there was a woman who was a prostitute and she saved those men in the Old Testament, but I cannot remember the names for sure. She got married. What about the whole book of Hosea? Isn't that the book where his wife is promiscuous, I'll at least say, and not faithful to him? She was reaping marriage benefits. Was it Hosea? I think it's Hosea. Y'all see, I didn't do the research on it. This is just me speaking off the cuff. By the way, I do record off the cuff. I don't do really any scripting. I just write down one through whatever and the topic I want to talk about. Okay. I prefer to be a little bit more raw and authentic in that way. Okay, so I just don't think it's true. Plus, there are different people that I've either known or known of or heard about or observed, whatever the case may be, whether it's in my real life or like far away in TV land. And there are people or in this case for me as a woman, that were very sexually promiscuous or free or whatever term you want to use, like I said before, who are married and have, for all intents and purposes that I know, a nice and healthy marriage. I just am not a fan of that. Here's the other reason why I'm not a fan of that. Because if we dial all of this down to its purest form, from hoe or whore or prostitute, and dial it all the way down to someone having sex outside of a sanctioned relationship from a Christian perspective, which would be marriage. So if anyone has been sexually active at all outside of marriage, what you're saying is that person can't reap marriage benefits. Untrue. That makes Christ's sacrifice null and void, because That means their sin will always be before them. So then what was the sacrifice of Christ for? No. Then it says your brain and body don't switch like that. Now, so here's where I can't agree that there's a mentality you have when you in these streets that can be harmful to marriage. And no, you don't switch like that. But let me tell you another switch that you don't switch well either, darling. These young ladies who are taught and have it beat in their head that if they have sex before marriage, it is wrong. It is wrong. Save yourself. Sex is bad. Sex is bad. Sex is bad. And then magically you're going to flip a switch on wedding night and sex is going to be good. That is not how human beings work. So the same way a human can't switch just like that and go from, I'm going to make up a number, a different guy every single day of the year, and having to switch to being with maybe one person for all of eternity, then also the other side of that coin is it's hard to flip someone's switch if you're constantly beating in their head that sex is bad in order for you to try to attempt to encourage them to remain chaste until their wedding day. Girl, I could talk about this with you all day. And then it says you got to prepare your mind for marriage because it's ministry. It is. But help me understand why the post could not have just been, you got to prepare your mind for marriage because it's ministry. That wasn't enough. Why do we have to start off with a tag? And maybe it was simply to draw attention, because I did read the caption and the person said they're starting a podcast. They have so much to talk about. And this can definitely be dissected 100 times over in a million different ways. I just wanted to give my thoughts and my opinion on it. I do not like the name calling. I do not like the idea that unless one is perfect, one can't have goodness in their lives. I'm not here for it. Because if what we're going to do is say, if you slept with like 2 or 3 people, you could. But if you slept with like 70 or 80 people, no, you can't have a healthy marriage. That's not fair. That's not how God works. That's not how forgiveness works. The one person you slept with and you weren't married is the equivalent of the 100 people you slept with when you weren't married. Because based on Christian beliefs, none of us are supposed to be engaging in anything like that outside of marriage. And whether it's 1 or 1,000, it's still a sin. It's wrong. What? Like, girl, y'all can get enough of all that judgment stuff. Let's get ready for the next segment. All right. So we're in our next segment. And I want us to talk about feminine sexuality. Maybe that would be the name of the topic, maybe. So there are 2 musical artists that are often on this one, I guess it would be a gossip blog on social media. I guess they bring information about celebrities, African-American, some, I guess it would be some Latino and Latina celebrity information to this gossip blog, but it's mostly by and large African-American or Black gossip, celebrity gossip information. And so these 2 musical artists are, there are a lot of comments that are usually left about them and the way that they present their sexuality. And so I'm not going to discuss them and their sexuality and the way they present it as much as I want to speak about the topic generally and maybe take a little piece from what they present to use in my conversation. I just want it to be known that the comfort of a woman to bear her body in any way does not automatically denote confidence. So if I am comfortable wearing a string bikini, no matter what my body looks like, No matter how much society has said, I need to lose this, gain that, divide this, multiply this, subtract that, add that, whatever society has decided, whether I allegedly fit into that mold, because I decide to wear a string bikini on the beach does not automatically denote confidence. Well, why not, Faith? Because sometimes the actions we choose are because we are absolutely not confident. Sometimes we are faking it until we make it. That's a possibility. And that wouldn't be confidence. Sometimes it's, I don't know any other way to solicit the attraction from whomever it is that I am interested in and that I want to be interested in me. Sometimes I may think the only way to do that is to put on my string bikini on the beach. Would that be confidence? I'd probably lean towards saying no. I only want us as women to know bearing it all does not equal confidence, and covering it up does not mean that you are being worn down by the patriarchy. It does not mean that you don't love yourself. It doesn't mean that you're not free. Just like in my segment, my spirituality and whole seeds segment for this episode, just because a woman, in this case, and I'm only speaking for me because I'm a woman, just because a woman can sleep with multiple men does not automatically mean that she's sexually free. Who says that the woman that only sleeps with her husband isn't sexually free? I think I could argue a lot to prove that she is. Right. So it's the same thing. Just because someone can wear a string bikini on the beach does not automatically mean that she's free or confident. And if I am fully covered, turtleneck and corduroy pants, that does not mean that I am not confident or free. I can tell you what, a woman can have on a cotton t-shirt, some cotton pants, a pair of Chuck Taylors, have her hair wrapped up with not one stitch of makeup and not an additional lace or eyebrow package. Just some Vaseline on her lips with some hoop earrings. And that woman can be equally as sexy as the woman in the string bikini. And let me be clear, it has nothing to do with what that woman looks like. It has nothing to do with the fact that she may have large boobs or smaller boobs or big hips or smaller hips or this complexion or that hair texture. It has nothing to do with any of that. It has everything to do with the confidence that she bears, which without trying, when a woman is confident, she naturally exudes a sexual energy, if you will, or she's in touch with her feminine sexuality. She's in touch with her sensuality as a woman. The gentleness, the peaceful, the kind, the long-suffering, the understanding, the tender-hearted. That person is also a sensual person. So you can be sensual in that cotton shirt and those cotton pants, just like you could be sensual in a string bikini. But don't mistake the confidence and sensuality just because a woman has little clothes on, but the woman who has more clothes doesn't. And I'm saying this because I want to encourage confidence in the women who feel like, but I'm not like that. But you don't have to be, dear. You don't have to be. But they don't pay me any attention. You don't need all of them to pay you attention. You just want one in particular. You want your one to pay you attention. Really, that's all you need. Trust me. I guess that's pretty much all I wanted to say. And I also want to say this last little bit as well. Although our society right now is real big on big boobs, big hips, big thighs, big butt, teeny tiny waist. May I submit for your consideration? Aaliyah was none of those items. She was not a woman with a large chest or a large bust. She was not a woman with large hips and a large derriere and with this super, super, super teeny tiny waist to counter, if you will, the larger hips and thigh ratio, if you will. She wasn't. She had more of like an athletic build. She looked like a volleyball player to me. That was her body type to me. And a lot of men believed that she was absolutely beautiful. And I would even go to say desirable. I just do not believe you have to look like everybody, do what everybody else is doing in order for you to be desired. And further, to drive it home again, you do not have to be in your stream bikini on the beach in order for you to be viewed as attractive or sensual. You can wear the outfit I mentioned, your cotton shirt, your cotton pants, your Chuck Taylors, your hair in a wrap, Vaseline on your lips, and your hoop earrings. And no matter what kind of body type you have, your confidence will then exude sensuality. And that comes out no matter what you got on. And that only shows up when you know who you are and you're confident in who you are. And that doesn't have anything to do with clothing or even physical movements that you show people that you're able to do. None of that has anything to do with that. Who you are is sensual just by virtue of you being a woman. Honey, walk in that. Don't worry about walking in a G-string. Walk in your womanhood and your femininity. Ooh, that's something that no man can deny. That's something that no man has. Walk in that, darling. Bloop. All right, so in this segment, I want to talk about The Real Housewives. So currently, The Real Housewives of Potomac is what's being aired. And I want to specifically talk about Candace Dillard Bassett. And I'll tell you why. I chose to speak about her because I remember one of my earlier episodes, I spoke about Kenya Moore, and there was another episode I spoke about Sky from Black Ink Crew. And I do think I want to have a segment on every episode where I'm discussing something that's based in reality television, because I do consume a lot of reality television. It's interesting to me because there's a lot you can learn about yourself and others, not specifically those actors in those roles. And I don't mean actors in the literal sense of the term, I am an actor, but like those humans that are functioning in that moment. It's not necessarily about them. It's about what you can learn from them and what they present. So I wanted to bring up Candace because I like to bring up the people that I think cause a lot of strong feelings, emotions, and reactions. I don't have much to say, but I do want to say this. Here is what I think may be causing people a lot of challenges with Candace. What I have observed from watching the show, keep in mind, we do not know these people. I said that before about Sky. I said it before about Kenya Moore Daily. We do not know these people at all. They are edited and edited and edited and re-edited. So we don't know these people. I want to make sure I make that clear. So I'm only speaking about this based on what we're shown in the show because it's still valuable information that can be used. What we see on the show is if Candace receives something at a level 4 from someone who's kind of popping back at the mouth, coming at her. Let's say it's at a 4. So we're talking 1 to 10. 10 is the most egregious. But they come at her with a 4. Most of us would expect that the response would be in kind. So possibly a 4 or Maybe you're not on your A game and you come at them with a 3 or 2. But maybe you know, you ready. Let's take it up a notch. You bring one, I bring the other. So maybe you come at it with a 5 or 6. People are anticipating that type of response. My observation is that Candace's responses tend to be up at a 10. So you can come at her with a 2 or 3 or 4. You're going to get a 10, a 10, or a 10. And maybe even higher. And that throws the viewer off. Because then it looks like, Candace, you're not defending yourself. You're out for blood. Candace's, my perception, her perception is, I'm defending myself. So let's remove Candace and let's just talk about this topic by itself away from her. When we have not resolved things from our past, whether it was childhood or in our adulthood, it doesn't matter, just in our past. When we have not resolved those items, what ends up happening is we respond in a strong and intense way to things that are really, really tiny. Because we are still perceiving a pebble being thrown at us as a boulder. Darling, you're not in that environment anymore. It's really a pebble this time. When you were 17, when you were 22, last year, it was a boulder. Today, where you stand in your life, it is truly just a pebble. But you have been caught up and conditioned yourself to believe that anytime someone throws anything at you, it is a boulder and you've got to respond in kind to protect yourself. No. That is a lack of self-awareness. That is a lack of growth. And that is someone who's not living in the moment. If you're in the moment, then you obviously see it's a pebble. But if you're not living in the moment and you are living knee deep and fully immersed in your trauma, you will always see it as a boulder. I have done this myself. Now, I may not be a Candace Dealer Bassett who can trade wits with you really quickly. That ain't my tea. That is not my ministry. That is not my gift. I can respond the way I need to respond, but I am not quick like her or Kenya Moore. Ooh, they are quick. But I have been in a position where my mind saw it as a boulder and it was truly a pebble because I was knee deep in a trauma from my past that I had not allowed myself to accept and understand that I was no longer in that place. I was responding to whomever had hurt me instead of responding to the person standing in front of me. I was not living in the moment. You have done it too. If you're listening to this, you want to know how I know? Because you're a human being. We all do it. So if Candace Dillard Bassett annoys you to no end, I want you to know you are seeing yourself. That is why she annoys you. You do the same exact thing. Somebody comes at you with a pebble. You still think you knee-deep in quicksand and can't get out. You come at them and try to annihilate them. And then you look like the bully and you again feel re-victimized. See, I told you it was a boulder. It wasn't. It still wasn't a boulder. It wasn't. Mm-mm. You're still in that quicksand. And literally all you have to do is stand up. That's how shallow the quicksand is. You literally all you have to do is just like move your leg and you're out of it. Mm-hmm. That's all. We all do it. She's no different than us. She's not bad. You're not bad. I'm not bad. We have to make a conscious decision to do the work to not live and exist in our traumas. Love y'all. So I decided that I think I want to have a segment, yet another segment, on every episode where I bring kind of a therapeutic note. Everything I say is probably going to be therapeutic. That's why the name is Therapeutic Reality. But more therapeutic in the sense that it's a little more specific to coaching or therapy type stuff. Stuff is an official word. It's a professional word too. So today I wanted to give you something to affirm yourself with. So this is for people who get caught up in the wrongness of themselves. I shouldn't have thought this. I shouldn't have done that. Why did I do this? What's so wrong with me? I can't ever this. I can't ever that. For anybody that gets in that space, especially if you get there pretty frequently, here's a way that I think you can affirm yourself. So I want you to say this to yourself. You can say it in your mind. You can say it out loud. You could write it down. You could type it somewhere in your phone. You could type it in a tablet. You can put it. You can handle it however you want. Write it on your mirror with your dry erase marker. Put it on some post-it notes. However you choose to do it. Here's how it goes. You would say, I feel, fill in the blank. And then immediately after that, the finishing of the sentence is, and that's okay. I feel blank, and that's okay. Let me tell you why that's important, considering how I started this segment. The first step to accepting who you are is you have to accept how you feel, because that's the essence of who you are. Whether your feelings are accurate based on what's happening around you, it doesn't matter. You feel it and it's okay. I want to say though, before I go any further, if what you're feeling is, I feel angry, I would encourage you to scratch through that angry and put in something a lot more vulnerable. Anger, and Dr. Phil said this, he said anger is a secondary emotion, and he is absolutely correct. Anger is an emotion we choose, and we choose it very quickly in our minds. That's how powerful and swift our minds are. Anger is secondary to the true feeling, because anger feels powerful and we feel in control when we're angry. But if we acknowledge that we feel hurt, she ain't hurt me. She don't even mean nothing to me. So ain't no way she could hurt me. She did. And have a seat. Thanks. So I would encourage you to cross out the anger and put a truer emotion, a more vulnerable emotion. It's just between you and you, boo. Nobody's going to know this. It's okay if a random lady at Walmart hurt your feelings because of the way she looked at you and you will never see her again. That's okay that hurt you, but that's a part of accepting you. Because when you can accept all parts of you, that's when you can grow out of the stuff that you're not too much a fan of. And that's okay too. So I feel blank, and that's okay. It's okay. However you're feeling, it's all right. Who you are is all right. And if you are not where you want to be as a human being, baby, you got all the time in the world to grow yourself about it. But first, you have to accept yourself for who you are. And that starts with accepting exactly how you feel in every moment. Y'all, here's our, I guess it could be a devotional moment. You want to call it a devotional moment? Okay, we can. So I'm in the New Testament in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 10. So that is 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 10. And that verse reads, and I am in the King James Version. It says, but by the grace of God, I am what I am. And his grace, which was bestowed upon me, was not in vain. But I labored more abundantly than they all. Yet not I, but the grace of God, which was with me. I really am grateful that I stumbled upon that scripture today. It's a humble scripture. It's also a humble verse. And it's also a confident verse where he says, "But I labored more abundantly than they all." And then he sandwiches it with some more humility. "Yet not I, but the grace of God, which was with me." And of course it starts with, "But by the grace of God, I am what I am. And his grace, which was bestowed upon me, was not in vain." That's meaningful to me because there are times where I feel like God's grace being bestowed upon me is in vain. God has granted me a lot of gifts to match my purpose. And I think a lot of us see a person's gifts and we can walk in a path with that green-eyed monster. And gifts on the surface, when you look at them, when you think about it from like a literal sense of the word, like it's wrapped in paper, it's under the tree, it's wrapped in paper, you get it with your cake after you blow out your candles. Gifts are nice. But with those gifts, from a spiritual perspective, comes responsibility. So while you might like that I have 15 gifts under the tree, that means I'm 15 times more responsible for what's under that tree from a spiritual perspective. And so that's just an aside. But to me specifically, I have failed to fully enact all of my gifts in my purpose. And it comes from a place of fear. It comes from a place of, don't nobody need me. Y'all got 7 million other of them. What you need me for? That's how I feel. But God didn't ask me my thoughts, my feelings, or my opinions when he gave those gifts to me. He gave them to me because I'm supposed to use them for him. Because there are people specifically that he has determined will have an ear and a heart geared toward me, which at the end of the day is his doing. No excuse for it. This is not a verse that I can fully say, yep, I'm right there. Of course, by the grace of God, I am what I am. That's a fact. But the part where it says, "And his grace, which was bestowed upon me, was not in vain." Now, don't get me wrong. I know that everything about me and everything that I'm endeavoring to do is not in vain. But I'm talking about the stuff that I am consciously ignoring and hiding under my bed and hiding under my pillow and stuffing in the closet. Not cool. It says, "But I labored more abundantly than they all." And in some ways I can feel that I have, but because I know I'm stuffing something under the bed, in the closet, under the pillow, in my trunk of my car, it makes me feel like I haven't labored more abundantly than they all. And even if I had, like the scripture states, it wouldn't be because of me. It would be because of the grace of God, which was with me. And the last part for all of us, no matter where we get in life, in whatever the arena, whether it's through material blessings, whether it's in spiritual blessings, which are the ultimate blessings, let's just always remember that it was because of the grace of God that was with us. We didn't do it. You didn't pass that test on your own. You didn't meet this wonderful human being that you want to spend the rest of your life with just because on your own. You didn't encounter this beautiful friend on your own, this great job with these amazing benefits and this great income on your own, this opportunity to put your gift out for people to be served and blessed by on your own. It was by the grace of God who was with you. I pray you never forget and that I never forget. In Jesus' name. All right, so this segment is about something I saw today on social media. It's related to Philly rapper Meek Mill. And so he tweeted this, and it caused a stir. It said, "I'll get all the main big artists in Philly a deal if they put them bodies behind them and squash them beefs I hear about. Got some hot young bulls from my city, but they all beefing." So, from what I read, don't know if it's true, there's a group of people who feel like this is great, and there's another group that feels like, how dare you? So, my perspective is, it's great. And my perspective is, how dare you? And I'll tell you why. There is a way to approach this approach. I absolutely love the thought of saying, hey, listen, I have your way out. You are amazing at what you do. You're an artist through and through. Here's a deal. Here's a safe way out of this life where you have to literally put your body and life on the line every day. I have you a way out of that over here. You don't have to worry about it. The only way you can have this is if you say, forget that beef, I'm gonna go over there. That is a solution to a problem. How can you be mad at that? I'll tell you how. In that moment, Meek Mill wasn't clued in fully to his audience. I believe, I could be wrong, I believe that were he to sit down with any of these young men individually or with their, I don't know what phrase I want to use. I want to stay away from the phrase gang because I think it gets used just a bit too frequently for men of color. So I'm not going to say that. I'm just going to say groups of young men where they have their loyalty. If he were maybe to sit down with any of them individually, the ones who he says are hot young bulls, or if he met with their groups and expressed his concern, because the tweet doesn't allow him to express his heart. A sit down says, y'all know I was here, here, and here. Later for all that. I got this right here for you, but I can't do this for you because X, Y, Z. It's not a judgment of you. I'm just trying to see less RIP hashtags about us. This is a solution that I know. Then that gives those young men an opportunity to say, I hear you, Meek, but what about this, this, and that? You know how that go. True, true, is Meek's response. And then maybe there's a negotiation where they can come to the middle, or there's a time frame, a goal set in mind. Do you understand? In mind. So I don't think his solution was wrong at all. I love it, actually. How many other dudes that have been put on don't come back and put people on? But he's endeavoring to do that. I think Twitter prevented him from being able to fully express what his heart was. And I believe with him being a guy that comes from the similar environments and backgrounds, he did not allow himself the opportunity to fully express what it is that he was intending to do and where his heart was. I don't know, dude. At all. But I'm choosing to believe that he meant well times a million and it just wasn't executed in the best way possible. But give it up for him for having a solution. Because how many people get on and don't think about anybody else? They only think about the hood because they want to show the hood how much better they are than the people who are still there. They might bring some turkeys for Thanksgiving. Okay. But how many people are literally trying to pull somebody out and change not only that person's life, but their family members' lives? Like, when someone makes it out of an environment like that, they're not the only ones that make it out. Their entire connected family group also changes their lives in those moments. And you can't, that ain't nothing you can sneeze at. So that's what I had to say about that. So I guess I was passionate about it or whatnot. Hey, girl. Bye. So there's another new segment that we'll be adding, I think, to an episode each week. I don't know if I will, but we're going to try some things out. So I think I want to highlight one of my Instagram posts for the week, and maybe delve a little bit into it. Maybe not. It is what it is. So I posted one day within the week. It was from the Instagram page, The Deep Life, and they posted a screenshot of a post from Twitter. And the person that posted it was the Stoic Emperor. And the statement was, if you are easily provoked, you are easily controlled. Isn't that true? I don't think it needs explanation. I don't think I really need to jump into anything. It's just the truth. And I think probably we immediately jump to anger when we think of being easily provoked. But we're also easily provoked in other ways. We can be easily provoked into believing we're less than. We can be easily provoked, and that's from a self-esteem perspective. We can be provoked from I can't think of something right now. I was just going to say that the provocation of others is not always from a place of anger. We can be provoked in so many other ways, whether it's sexually. Maybe we move in a certain way because we're easily provoked to move in that way. It could be spiritual. Maybe we're easily provoked in a direction spiritually that's not true and authentic to who we are in that moment, in that time. Maybe we're being provoked. Fill in the blank. There are a lot of different ways we are provoked. But when you are easily provoked, you are easily controlled. And that's the key. And I think a lot of us shudder to think that we could be controlled, and that our thought process or our emotions could have some place in that. But it really does. I really, really, really like that statement from the Stoic Emperor that was on The Deep Life. Take care. Okay, in another new segment, we're going to highlight a tweet of the week. And this week's tweet of the week is my tweet. I wrote, I get personally offended when people disrespect Miss Iyanla. She may trigger people, but she never disrespects anyone. She's a beautiful elder in our community, and she deserves her honor. I wrote that because I have watched so many episodes of Iyanla Fix My Life. And I've watched so many people who were so much younger than her be completely and totally disrespectful to her. And I get personally offended because what I get from her is that she's a loving soul. And I don't mean that some on the surface loving soul, like I'm just here to heal you, goodbye. I mean, deep down in them nooks and crannies, I just see it. That's all I'll say. And so that offends me when someone disrespects a human like her. And again, we don't know these people. We don't know them at all. We don't. But from what I am observing, that's my statement. And it goes to a larger issue in general that, and I'm going to say this to Black people because the majority of the participants on the show are Black people. We are forgetting about the respect your elders part. And so it's important that we not throw the baby out with the bathwater. So over time, we've learned that there are a lot of elders that in many moments did not deserve respect. They were harmful in different ways to youngsters. They were dismissive or neglectful to different youngsters. But every elder is not that elder that did not function and stand up to the honor that they were receiving. That ain't Miss Iyanla. She not one of those folk to any of those folk on the show. And there's a misperception that triggering means disrespect and triggering means you're mean. You are triggered because you are triggered. That's your issue. That ain't her fault that you are being triggered, because it's your trigger, not hers. So just like your coworker, your supervisor, your friend, your boo, when you are triggered, it's because it's your trigger, not theirs. Yes, I know that some people can purposely step on spots, but let's not forget about that other segment I just posted or talked about. If you are easily provoked, you are easily controlled, darling. If they know your triggers and they keep stepping on those triggers, then maybe it's time to do some growth around said triggers. Just saying. And I know that's a very general statement. I know there are always different levels to everything that could be said. But from the perspective that I'm speaking about in this show, and in much of our life experiences, our trigger is our issue. It's not the other person's fault. And it doesn't mean they're disrespecting us or that they're bad people or that they're intending us harm, because we are affected by a trigger that we have not yet learned to resolve. And even if she's just straight out of line, let's say that that's true for the sake of this argument, she still deserves honor from us because she's our elder. And our community cannot heal, remain healed, resolve, treat, grow, expand, nurture, and every other word in between if we cannot remember these fundamental principles of respect and honor. You know, I did not grow up in the hood, but I've always, and I never knew what it was. There was something about the hood that I felt like I always understood, and I never verbalized it. It was just internal, and it was just true to me. Something I would never say. I just always felt that. And then I met my husband, and even before meeting him, all of these people that I worked with in New York City, specifically in the Bronx, you would say they're from the hood. And the true connection that I had with them and them with me, and I won't even go into anything any deeper. I'll just say, yes, I get the hood and the hood gets me. That's something that the hood, especially I'm going to say in New York City, I can't speak for every big city in the country. I can't speak for every hood in New York City, but I think it's safe for me to say by and large, respect and honor are very important principles that remain there. That's not unlike respect and honor in a mafia group. Like if you watch The Sopranos or Godfather. It's not unlike if you watch any shows like Game of Thrones or any shows in that time period where honor and respect are everything. All of these three different groups that I'm discussing, honor and respect are the top of the list. That basically can determine How will you survive in those environments and in those groups? That's inherent in Black culture and in the Black community. And if we think we are going to move forward and not have that, darling, well, you're lost. We're lost. Just saying. And that was all a bunch of extra that went along with why I tweeted what I tweeted during the last Fix My Life episode. All right, so this will be the last segment for this episode. I had another topic to discuss with you all, but I am going to wait and post it some other time or record it some other time. And I can't say that it will be next week. I do try to be really open when it comes to recording so that it's, again, as authentic and just kind of real and down to earth as possible. So this last one is about COVID and staying home. I just want to bring this up for us to think about. So we all are aware that there's the waiting the 6 feet apart. There's the washing of the hands. There's the wearing of the masks. I think that's across the country. We're all taught, wash your hands, wear a mask, wait 6 feet apart from others. But there are many of us who aren't doing that, and so much so that we are living as if there's not a pandemic that exists. We are hanging out with people and we ain't masking and we ain't 6 feeting. And it's not just celebrities. It's all of us in this country. There are a lot of us that are doing that. I want to help you go a little bit deeper into the whys. You know me. Is it possible that it's not that you're necessarily exhausted with staying safe? But may I submit for your consideration? I think I had a minister once that used to say that. But may I submit for your consideration the possibility that it's not that you're exhausted with being safe. It's more that maybe you're feeling anxious about being seen. You know, a lot of us find our validation in what others think of us. Even though we may not ever know exactly what they're thinking, a lot of us find validation in just the possibility that a positive thought could be coming our way based on how we show up in the world. And I don't necessarily mean show up in the world because our heart is pure. I mean show up in the world because of how we present aesthetically. So whether that's hair or clothes or makeup or the lack thereof or the car, the job, the title, the house, the social gathering, I don't know. It could be a gazillion things. But I wonder if maybe we just need to be seen. And so much so that we'll put ours and others' lives on the line to be seen. Like if you sit for a moment and don't, and if you remove the offense that you might feel from this statement and what you may be perceiving as judgment from me. If you could remove that for the moment and just sit in this moment and think, close your eyes even, if COVID kills, if this virus, when it enters some bodies, kills and exterminates those bodies, does my being out mean more than that? And your actions, our actions often say, yeah. Dressing up, looking cute, going here, going there, being seen, being around, being outside, etc. We've made that so much more important than life itself. Y'all, what's up? What's wrong, y'all? What's wrong? We were not supposed to sit in our homes from March until now and be twiddling our thumbs and binge watching shows only. We were supposed to be allowing this to be a time to grow us and stretch us. So if being seen and being outside is my thing, I was supposed to stretch myself so that the next time I came outside, I was a different human being. So much so that I ain't gotta be outside. Hey. I was supposed to stretch myself so much that I learned this about me. And I worked on that about me. And I learned this about my spouse. And we worked on that in our marriage. Not that superficial, watered down marriage mess. I learned a new recipe. Congratulations, girl. I'm talking about that real deal below the surface stuff. That childhood stuff your husband got going on. Your childhood stuff that you got going on that keeps showing up in your marriage. That's the stuff I'm talking about, y'all. That's what I'm talking about. Those gifts from God that you've been putting up on the shelf in your closet and closing the door and acting like it's not up there every time you open your closet. That gift just to chilling. Screaming out, will you please put me in, coach? That's what March to November was supposed to do for us. But if we didn't do any work from March to November, we were twiddling thumbs. And then we were exhausted because we needed to go get filled by the people around us. Not by ourselves, not even by our spouse. And most importantly, not by God, but by people outside. I mean, I'm social. You are listening to an extrovert here. Yep. And your point is, this is not to attack you or come down hard on you. I get the needs, but there are a lot of ways to get needs met, y'all. It's not worth it. It's not worth it for the people that love you to have to possibly suffer because we need to be outside. For you to suffer because you need to be outside, it ain't worth it, friend. It ain't worth it. It ain't worth it. Allow yourself to look forward to being outside again when it's truly a safer place for us. Look forward to it. Plan toward it. But don't miss the blessing in the journey right now, because it's there. All right, y'all. I am sleepy and I got a lot to do tonight. Schoolwork, stuff from work. Oh, child. We're going to figure it out. I appreciate you for listening. As always, please go to my Twitter, Faith's Reality, or my Instagram, Therapeutic Reality. Click on the link in my bio in both of those places and reach out to me and express your thoughts and feelings or anything that you want to hear. If you listen to me on the Anchor app, you can always record a voice note and leave that with me as well. And I will share that on an upcoming episode. And thanks again. Y'all take care.